You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a ballot measure that could change how elections run in Shasta County, major changes proposed at Southern Oregon University, and why Asante is asking state regulators for an exemption. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And reporter Rowan Vitalia is off today, but we'll start with this conversation we recorded with him yesterday. Roman, you brought us another election story this week, this one about a ballot measure in Shasta County. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that measure is?
Yeah, so this is Measure B, and it would make a lot of really big changes to Shasta County elections. So it would require that elections take place on one day. Right now, they kind of take place over sort of the course of a month. You know, ballots would have to be hand counted instead of using machines to count them. There would be no more universal vote by mail. You would basically have to apply for an absentee ballot like you do in the past or in other states if you're, you know, sick or disabled or in the military or something like that. You'd also have to provide photo ID to vote when you go in person. You'd have to show your photo ID. And then a bunch of other smaller changes to the elections. But, you know, I think the interesting part about this and the big reason why we're covering it is that a lot of the changes that they propose in this, you know, seem to violate state and federal election laws.
Okay, so some of these seem to violate state and federal election laws. So why are the supporters in favor of it?
Yeah, so this has kind of been pushed by these local activists who believe that the current system isn't trustworthy. And they've been trying to change the election system there for a while. The right-wing majority on the Board of Supervisors has actually attempted to make some changes back in 2023. They voted to scrap their voting machines that they had based on unfounded conspiracy theories. And then they wanted to try hand-counting their elections. The county elections clerk had started to develop a process, determined that it was going to cost around $1.6 million extra per election and require an additional 1,300 staff members to do that, which is
a lot.
A lot of people, yeah. Especially in rural Shasta County. But the state ended up stepping in and passed a law banning hand counting in most elections, specifically targeting Shasta County for this. So, you know, these activists have claimed that the previous elections official was stuffing ballots, hiding things from voters, kind of being sneaky, you know, even though their candidate have won in elections a lot of the time. The right-wing majority is still in charge of Shasta County. They've also claimed widespread voter fraud, but there's not really any evidence of that. They have also been able to get their preferred elections official in charge, Clint Curtis. He was appointed last year, and he's been making big changes to the election system, but all in, you know, legal ways, like adding cameras to film all of the ballots being counted. But, you know, despite this, they still want to make the changes that they want to see in the election system, which is what this measure would do.
And Measure B has already faced some legal challenges. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, so there was already a lawsuit against this measure to try and keep it off the ballot. A local resident in Reading, Jennifer Katsky, filed a lawsuit claiming, you know, that the measure is illegal and that it's, you know, a waste of time and taxpayer money to have voters even consider it in the first place. I went down there to Reading for a hearing about the ballot measure. Ultimately, though, the judge ended up allowing it on the ballot. He said, you know, that's because it's really rare to keep a measure off the ballot before the election. You need to have sort of extraneous circumstances, and it's better to fight a ballot after the election because, you know, the judge said, you know, it might not pass, and then we don't have to worry about this.
And so what's the likelihood that if it passed, it would take effect?
Yeah, and that's the big question because we don't really necessarily know about some of it. I mean, there are some parts that could be legal, like using paper poll books. I believe they already do in Shasta County under Clint Curtis. And then we've actually have seen, though, a measure with some of these changes already get struck down in California. So voters in Huntington Beach in Southern California approved a measure last year that would require photo ID to be shown when voting, and that's not allowed in California. It's very strict. You present your ID when you're registering, but not when you're voting. You know, opponents of voter ID say that, you know, it discourages voting and disenfranchises people, especially for people who don't already have an ID or they can't afford one. So the court struck down Huntington Beach's measure after the election, so we know at least that voter ID portion wouldn't be legal. So if Measure B passes, it would likely immediately face a lawsuit from the state, and then the county's going to have to pay some legal fees and defend it. They'll probably fight about it over in court. The supporters of the measure hope that they can keep the parts that are legal in effect and then tweak the illegal parts to fit existing law or, I guess, throw those parts out. We're not really sure if a judge would even allow keeping only part of it because the whole point is to they talked about keeping the intent of the measure alive. And so if you're throwing out parts of the measure, then voters didn't really intend for that to happen in the first place.
A lot of times there's issues of severability.
Exactly.
That.
Yeah. So we'll kind of have to see if it passes and then figure out what goes down
What's
in the
next?
Fight. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, there actually also is a statewide measure that voters are considering on voter ID in November. So a measure from a Republican assembly member finally got enough signatures, and that would change the state constitution to require voter ID to be shown at the polls or when voting by mail. And so that would be legal if passed because it's a statewide measure. But, you know, you can't just make that voter ID change just in Shasta County or just in a city.
Okay, Roman. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah.
And that was Roman Battaglia. Jane, you reported this week on updates to Southern Oregon University's financial situation. Tell us what happened there.
So as we've talked about before, SOU is facing another really serious financial crisis, even with $15 million that they were promised from the state legislature. And there's some strings attached to that money. One of them is creating a long-term plan for financial sustainability as soon as possible. So for a little bit of context, the university is currently operating with about a $12.5 million deficit. That is predicted to increase to almost $17 million by fiscal year 2030. Without any changes, SOU is projected to have just 2 days of cash on hand at the end of fiscal year 2027. So SOU has to create this long-term plan if they want to get the $15 million. They're working with Deloitte Consulting to do that on a really quick timeline. So Deloitte has been working on this for the last month or two. And there was a special meeting earlier this week where Deloitte previewed their preliminary report for this plan for the SOU Board of Trustees.
And so what exactly is in that preliminary plan?
There is a lot. You can see Deloitte's whole presentation is linked on our website if you want to go look at the actual slides. It's super interesting. There are some things that they say SOU is doing really well, some core strengths that the institution has, and then there are plenty of other things that need to be addressed if the university is to stay afloat. They say that SOU needs to make a total of $18 to $20 million in cuts. One of the big things they say is to completely rethink SOU's academic programs. Deloitte says those need to be overhauled to make sure that they're really serving community needs, partnering with local employers, maybe remaking certain types of degrees or credentials. They want to make sure that SOU is serving not only traditional students who might want to live on campus for 4 years, but also maybe older, non-traditional students who have different needs. One of the other things they mentioned is potentially outsourcing administrative services, major cuts to faculty, staff, and athletics, possibly changing the health insurance provider for the university. The current one is really expensive. And then Deloitte also said kind of at the end that this plan will be really difficult to implement, this path that they have laid out. SOU will have to find partners. They're going to need support. There's a lot of risks. There's no margin for error, basically. So Deloitte says this is the only option forward for SOU, or else the university will risk having to potentially wind down operations. And so Deloitte says that should be kind of a backup plan in case this path forward doesn't work, which would obviously be a huge blow to the region if SOU were to close down. One trustee had asked about the possibility of maybe doing a merger or an acquisition, but Deloitte was pretty blunt, and they said SOU isn't really an attractive merger option right now for another entity. So they say that this path forward is the only option.
And all of this could also affect JPR.
It could. So SOU holds the licenses for Jefferson Public Radio. Our main building is on the SOU campus. This preliminary Deloitte plan has $300,000 in cuts for JPR. That is basically the salary and benefits for two employees. The vast majority of JPR's funding, I should say, comes from the JPR Foundation. So it's really, this is not much. $300,000 is not much in the grand scheme of $20 million in cuts for SOU. And it's almost 9% of JPR's budget. The Deloitte consultant had also talked this week about spinning off JPR or finding it a new home. It's really unclear what that means at this point. SOU President Rick Bailey, I asked him. He didn't know what that meant. I asked JPR Executive Director Paul Westell. He didn't know what that meant. So it's kind of to be determined exactly what that might look like. But Executive Director Paul Westell says JPR will work with the university, continue programming, will continue to exist, will adapt. He's looking at a couple potential future options for maybe there being some changes, but nothing is really finalized yet. That $300,000 is on top of $525,000 that JPR recently lost in federal funding. So it is definitely another hit. But the actual future is a little bit to be determined at this point in terms of what might actually change. And I should note, as I said, that JPR is licensed to SOU, but we do cover the university just like any other institution. And no leaders from JPR reviewed our reporting before air.
And Jane, I'm getting a real sense of deja vu here. We've had this conversation in other months and other years at this point.
We have. SOU has been here before. In 2023, the university cut more than 80 full-time equivalent positions. In just September, less than a year ago, trustees approved another plan to cut more than $10 million over 4 years. And some of this is just the general problems that all higher education is facing across the country, I will say. There are fewer students going to college in general. There's a lot of distrust in higher education. Higher costs, shifts in federal funding. So other institutions are struggling as well, closing down or shutting programs, and SOU is clearly not immune to that.
Okay, Jane, what happens next here?
That is really the million-dollar question because there's so much that's to be determined. No specific details have been released yet. This is a preliminary plan. There's no particular programs that have been cut yet. Deloitte did name some programs at SOU that are losing money, but nothing is finalized. They haven't said, we are cutting this program. It was a really sobering meeting. SOU President Rick Bailey says they're going to work really hard and give this plan everything they've got. So it's really serious, but you know, he says they've got to move forward. So in terms of next steps, Deloitte is going to release its full plan on Monday in 3 days. They will have a Zoom presentation that afternoon to discuss the plan. So that's where we're hoping to get more granular details and more specifics. The SOU Board of Trustees is going to have a listening session on May 5th, Tuesday, 5 to 7 p.m. There's some room for public comment. And then the SOU Board of Trustees is going to vote on the plan 1 week from today, Friday evening. So it's a really quick timeline for all of this. President Rick Bailey himself said that he didn't see a lot of Deloitte's suggestions until this week's meeting. So super tight turnaround for really life-changing potential changes for SOU. And then if once this plan is approved, all of these changes will have to be made on a really quick timeline. They have to be done by June of 2027, basically a year from now, in order to keep the institution financially viable. So if the plan gets approved, it'll really be all hands on deck to get it all done quickly.
Well, I've got one prediction, Jane, that we'll be talking about this again
we
on the
will,
debrief in
for
a week
sure.
And probably in 2 weeks.
Yes,
Justin, you reported on Asante wanting to purchase a surgery center in Medford. First of all, why did you cover this?
So this was interesting because Asante is requesting an emergency exemption from review by state regulators to buy the surgery center. So the OHA, Oregon Health Authority, has something called the Healthcare Market Oversight Program. That's meant to ensure hospital mergers don't increase costs or reduce patient access. You can begin to see that consolidation of healthcare facilities around the country has led to that. So Asante expressed interest in buying the surgery center. They were already a partial owner in it. That triggered a preliminary review by OHA as part of this oversight program last year.
And where is the OHA in the process of allowing this purchase?
They've basically paused the review, and that's because Asante stopped providing requested information to the state. So I went through a lot of these documents in this review, and OHA has asked a lot of questions about operations and ownership, the effect the sale will have on patient access, and Asante answered that. But they also asked for other things that Asante was less keen to provide. For example, an explanation for a decline in Asante's community benefit spending for a couple years. They had a back and forth between that. Asante initially told OHA that information related to some of these requests would be too cost prohibitive for them to to provide. But the one sticking point right now is that OHA has requested payer contracts between both facilities, between the surgery center and the hospital, and that's to determine what costs and price change there might be if Asante buys the surgery center.
And quickly, what did those contracts show?
Well, so we don't know exactly what they show because Asante didn't provide them, but Asante did admit that prices will increase for these procedures if Asante purchases the surgery center. But they still haven't turned over the documents, and so this review process is paused, and that's why they're kind of going through this loophole and asking for an emergency exemption from this process.
Well, thanks, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening.